His wife had passed away a few years earlier, and all the locals loved to gossip about Gabe and his paint-splattered jeans. Lori gave them something to really gossip about our last morning there, when she kissed Gabe on the mouth right in front of the cafe window. She and I were about 3 miles down the road when Lori said, "You know what, Hope? I'm going to marry that man." I studied her profile and solemnly said, "I know." I also knew that on June 19th, Lori and I would not be flying to Honolulu. Somehow, it was okay. Many years later, when my husband and I saw one of Gabriel's paintings in a restaurant, I told Darren that, looking back on that season of my life, I realized I didn't need the actual trip to Hawaii as much as I had needed the possibility of such an adventure. That was what Lori gave me. She dared me to dream when I wanted to die. Darren said I should get back in touch with her because true friends like that are hard to come by. "I know," I said, "but Gabe is practically famous now. They've probably moved to an estate. She might not remember me."
"She'll remember you."
"I don't know if the phone number I have is right anymore."
"You won't know until you dial it and see."
"But what would I say? I miss you, Lori. By any chance, do you still have the key to the back door of my heart? Because I have yet to make a duplicate and give it to another friend." No, I wouldn't call Lori or write her. The season of our friendship had passed. Then, as only God can, he surprised me. I think he prompted Lori to call out of the blue just to prove that he knows me by heart. He knows what I need, even when I'm too timid, or belligerent, to ask for it. Lori and I had an unfinished dream. Neither of us had yet learned to do the hula. Chapter 1. The day Lori called me, she was in New York. I was in the garage, mopping up psychedelic puddles of rocket pops. Our ancient freezer had coughed its last icy breath sometime during the night, and the entire summer supply of Little League frozen confections was forced to seek alternate accommodations. Unfortunately, the popsicles tried this on their own and met with disaster. "Gabe has meetings all afternoon," Lori said, after I recovered from the shock of hearing her voice in the middle of my mess. "I know it's last minute, but I'd love to drive up to see you."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes, very sure, if it's not too inconvenient." I warned her about the popsicle massacre. "And it'll take you a couple of hours. Are you sure you want to drive?"
"Yes, I love to drive, remember?"
I smiled. Yes, I remembered. Lori had a passion for the open road. "Are you going to rent a convertible?"
"You know it."
"Now, don't go to any trouble." I hung up the phone, rinsed my permanently cherry-scented mop, and frantically began cleaning the rest of my humble abode, like Tigger on steroids. When Lori pulled into the driveway 3 hours later, she emerged from a black convertible sports car and smoothed her straight blonde hair. Back in college, her hair was as brown as mine. She looked taller than I remembered, maybe because I was feeling rather small at the moment, hiding behind the living room curtains, spying on her and wishing I had done all the laundry last night so the dryer wasn't making that thunking noise in the background. Lori adjusted the collar on her crisp white sleeveless shirt and pulled off her sunglasses. For one paralyzing moment, I couldn't imagine what we would talk about. I opened the front door, and miraculously, all time and differences evaporated. We hugged and started to talk over the top of each other's sentences, as if we were back in our dorm room. All that was missing were the Oreos and Reese's Pieces. We talked nonstop. I only remember one part of the marathon conversation, which was when Darren returned from the park with our three boys. They looked hot and frazzled and ready to be home. I couldn't believe the afternoon was gone.